This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Doug and Jess, moments away, 10th caller now wins a Sorgles gift certificate at 412-922-1020. But if you'd like to talk to Doug and Jess, new year, 2020 is underway. The Organic Gardener, start dialing 866-391-1020. Doug from EverybodyGardens.com, Jessica Walliser right now. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
Hooray, another year.
Aren't you a Pollyanna this morning?
Another year. Hooray. Still alive. Hooray.
Rob, why are you laughing so hard at that? You're feeling the same way?
No, I'm happy.
Oh, you're happy.
Very
All
happy,
right.
Because the end is near.
Oh, jeez.
Happy New Year.
Oh, my goodness. We were to the Pollyanna references. We were talking about the movie Pollyanna. And what was the statement that changed his mind?
If you look for the bad in people, you'll always find it.
Right. So you look for the good in the day, Doug.
That's right.
Right.
Happy New Year!
There you go.
All right.
That's more like it.
Another
That's
decade.
That's more like it. Another decade of fabulousness in the garden,
yes.
Right?
I am looking forward to the garden. I was out there. You won't believe it. I still have bulbs to plant. I keep running across bulbs and should have done it yesterday, but didn't. And got to go in today because I'm going to Baltimore to cover this trade show called Mance, Mid-Atlantic Nursery Trade Show. So it's got to be done today.
Now, what are you hoping to find at Mance? You have your eye on
just something new.
Okay.
I'll go through different breeders and see if there's anything cool, you know, and not just that, but, you know, tools and seeds and varieties. And I get a lot of good stories out of there. So it's fun.
Yeah. Now, I know before we came on air, you were talking about that, you know, we were talking about planning the vegetable garden for the coming year, and you had mentioned that there were some new veggies that you want to try.
You know, there's this one catalog called J.L. Hudson. It's a weird one. No pictures, just listings, you know, from California, and I've been ordering there forever, and I just like to look through it and find a couple things, and yeah, there's these, this Russian brown or brown Russian cucumber, which in the catalog says something like the ugliest but best tasting. Yeah, strangest looking but best tasting. And then there's this weird.
Is it brown? It's brown.
Yeah, it's
cucumber?
Like brown and kind of like nettled, like there's netting around it.
Okay. It's almost like a cantaloupe.
Yeah, kind of like that. And so sometimes I see stuff like that and I'm just like, that'll be fine. I didn't plant cucumbers last year. My daughter loves cucumbers. I'm like, this will make me plant cucumbers.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll put some in peat pots. And then I'll
start them early.
Direct sow some.
Okay.
And then there's this weird beet, and it's called Three Root Grex, and it's a cross between Lutz Overwintering, Crosby Purple Egyptian, and Yellow Intermediate Mangle. And when you plant the seeds, you get all sorts of weird different beets. So I'm interested in that. I think that'll be cool.
So they took the cross, and then now you have all the progeny, which are just kind of random genetic crosses.
And, but, you know, you start putting all these names in there, Crosby Purple Egyptian and Yellow Intermediate Mangle, I'm in. I don't know what they are, but
it's interesting to me that you don't grow cucumbers in your garden, because that's like a staple in my vegetable garden.
I grow them, but I just, you know, I
know don't have a lot of sun, so that's
probably through the craziness of the start, you know, a lot of times I just don't. You know, I just don't get to cucumbers. You know, usually I'm adding them just by going to the nursery and getting a few plants and sticking them in here. I like to grow them up on trellises and stuff. But we should talk a little bit about planning a vegetable garden, you know, which way the rows should be, all that sort of thing, if you're thinking about doing that. Oh, one more thing. Nursery still has garlic, and they're almost giving it away. If you wanted to tuck in some garlic, they have some.
And it's the ground's not frozen yet, so therefore it's not too late. So ideally, earlier in the season, but hey, if they've
got
it.
You could get away with it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so planning. I mean, now is the time. This is what we gardeners do, right? We flip through those seed catalogs, as Doug is doing, obviously, and I need to do, and we start dreaming, right? This is also the time to put pen to paper and start planning your vegetable garden. And if you're, you know, an established vegetable garden, draw out your existing beds, where you're going to put each crop, you know, how you're going to rotate it and make it different from last year. Even if something is just a few feet over, that can make a big difference. If you're planting a first-time vegetable garden or you're expanding your existing vegetable garden, also get that on paper. Draw out where the new beds will be, so when the, you know, when the weather breaks, you can get started on building all those new beds right away, whether they're raised beds or in-ground beds. You know, have a plan in hand so that when spring strikes, you're ready to go.
Tell them about that book from Tara, that raised garden bed. It was a big deal.
Yeah, Raised Bed Revolution. So this is Tara Nolan, who works with me on the website Savvy Gardening. And her book, Raised Bed Revolution, came out. It's one of the best-selling garden books in recent years. And it talks about, what do you need to do when you build a raised bed garden? What are options of making the beds? You know, what some different designs. She's got a lot of projects in there, from even tiny little beds that are up on wheels that you can have on a deck or a patio, all the way out to, you know, full size 8x4 raised beds kind of materials.
When I hear from people who want to start, I always recommend them to do that, to do some kind of raised bed garden, to build up. Instead of do what I did in the early days of just continually adding compost and stuff to the dirt until finally, after years and years and years, you have this great soil. But boy, if you could just buy some great soil and stick about 8 inches in there and keep building,
yeah,
it'd be easier.
Yeah, and we're talking actually at home about expanding our vegetable garden and putting in some big raised beds, like 16-inch tall raised beds, just because. In the end, even though it's more of an investment up front, in the end it's pays off because it's lower maintenance, it's fewer weeds, it's that good soil again.
What would you use to hold those beds in place? What would you think for a 16-inch bed? What would it be like?
I would like to do a garden like Nikki Jabor's up in Halifax, where you have like a 2x8 kind of, two of those stacked on top,
cedar?
Sort of a double layer. I'd love to be able to find like hemlock or locust or something. I don't know if we can find that around here. Her beds are made of hemlock and they're beautiful, and that's a long-lasting wood. I won't use treated wood.
Right.
Even the newer treatment products I don't want to use in the garden.
Well, just like, that's why
food,
you know,
so.
Rough cut cedar is easy to get. It's
yeah.
cheap.
Yeah.
Lasts
about,
I bet you could find,
20 years or so, 15
I don't know.
Years.
It lasts a long time.
Does it? Yeah, especially that like, thickness. If you're getting a real thick
not
board.
Like pine.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about your garden, though, when I think cucumbers, that's a tradition for you, though. You have to have cucumbers,
oh, yeah.
don't you, to make
yeah.
your pickles?
Yep, yep.
You know?
And we eat a lot of fresh cucumbers. Like, we, you know, all year round, we go through, we buy a lot of the greenhouse cucumbers, you know, the ones grown in greenhouse and organic. And, you know, they can be a little expensive, but if we can grow our own, all the better. I'd love to have a greenhouse to be
I'm
able
gonna
to do
grow
it year
that
round.
Russian brown next to your silver slicer that you told me about.
There you
Real
go.
Quick, the other thing about Mance is I'll be able to talk to a lot of other garden writers that have actually grown some of this new stuff. I'd much rather get that recommendation
yep.
than like the breeder telling me it's the best thing ever. Till next year.
Right.
All right, folks, we'd love to hear from you. Already a few folks lined up for Doug and Jeff today, 866-391-1020. Next hour, Joe and Frank Dantisi cleaning out the freezer. All those great recipes, mix and match, give us your ideas. That's an hour away, but now it's all about your garden. We'll be right back. All right, let's get right back to the phones. Here's Ann for Doug and Jess. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Good
Hi.
Morning. Hi. Oh. I have a question for Jessica about the weeping Alaskan cedar that she wrote about in the Trib right before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Is it deer resistant?
They are in my yard. So weeping Alaskan cedar, and if you want to read more about it, you can also go to savvygardening.com. There's an article there. It is, they've never bothered it at my house. Now, it is, I will say this, it is tucked in a corner. We have a stockade fence around the front part of our backyard, and it's tucked in a corner there. And I know the deer don't like to kind of be cornered, so they tend to stay away from areas like that. However, they have eaten the juniper and the holly that are right next to my weeping Alaskan cedar, but they have not touched either one of the cedars.
Yes, they've eaten two deer-resistant plants.
Exactly, right next to it, but they have not eaten that. So that, to me, is a good sign.
And cedars in general are known as deer-resistant.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay, but I do suggest that you want to keep an eye on it for any signs of nibbles, and if some, you know, if they take a taste, then you want to spray it or fence it in right away.
Okay, great. Okay? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh.
One time I did a story on a guy. He does all the landscape for a college, and he had never been interviewed before, and he was so nervous about it that the interview was for TV. The interview couldn't be used. I knew it when I was interviewing him. And so I told the guy just to keep rolling and pretend like he wasn't shooting. And that's when he just started talking about this weeping Alaskan cedar that he had found. This was back when it was a very, not rare plant, but mm-hmm. not used in the landscape very often. And just his affinity for the plant and finding something different. You know, when the camera was off him, he could just let it all out.
Yeah, yeah. Did you air that?
Yeah. Oh, I used all that.
You didn't air the formal interview.
No. The formal part of the interview, I think he just says his name, and then it just goes to us looking at the weeping Alaska cedar.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. That's funny. That's fun. It's a
Kay
great plant.
In the North Hills for Doug and Jess. Hey, Kay, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. Have they developed anything? If I am correct in this, when we have a tomato blight, you have to clean up your garden and get everything out of there, all the leaves and everything. Do they have any kind of spray or something that we can put on in the dirt or on top of the dirt? It is, the spores are in the dirt, am I correct?
Yes. Here's the thing. There are some products that you can, that are basically, they consist of good microbes that supposedly help manage the bad microbes in the soil. It's not that they specifically target those blight spores. It's more that they boost the health of your soil and they increase the positive activity in the soil. I have had mixed success and read mixed results about them. Now, the companies that make these products, one is called MycoStop, the other is Actinovate, there's a couple other ones. You know, they will tell you, oh, stops blight in its tracks. Right? That I've not really had great experience with them. They're not super expensive. They won't hurt your soil, so you can try them if you want, but whether or not they're actively going to affect the rate of disease transmission, that's arguable.
And the two diseases we're talking about are early blight and Septoria leaf spot, but there is another type of blight that's airborne that is rarer,
more rare, one
in 7-8 years called late blight that usually comes later. But yeah, those early ones, how I try to combat it, Kay, is just using different cultural practices, which is mulching and especially succession planting, and also trying to find varieties that are disease resistant that are still tasty. And so
none of that has worked so far for me. It just seems like somebody would have developed something that really would work.
Well, the problem is with all those parts, there's no way to target that specific fungal organism because there's so many beneficial fungi in the soil. In fact, our plants cannot live without symbiotic relationships with various species of fungal organisms in the soil. That's how they acquire a lot of their nutrients. And so when you apply an antifungal to the soil, not only are you getting rid of that, you know, pest fungus, but you're also getting rid of all the beneficial fungal organisms that our plants can't live without. And that's the biggest issue.
Kay, one thing we have to mention too is how many seasons now in a row have we had where it's just been incredibly wet, where I don't care. These plants are susceptible to fungal diseases. That's just who they are. And when you have at least the last two seasons, maybe three, maybe more, where you have just rain, it's going to be hard. And again, I'm just going to reiterate that by succession planting, I did pretty well at beating the blight.
And the other thing I would suggest to you, Kay, is do you have the opportunity to put your tomatoes in another place? In a different bed?
I really don't. Okay. I have a little spot that has a 7-foot fence. We have so many deer.
Okay.
It's just, and it's they're raised beds.
Okay. I was going to suggest, too, if you could grow them in containers for a few years where you're using like a sterile potting soil, maybe mixed with some compost, and try your tomatoes in containers for a few years, you will definitely have, you know, very low rates of disease transmission there. Especially if they're new containers and new fresh potting soil, as it should be every year, and that would help.
And that is kind of one of the reasons also that straw bale gardening became a big deal,
right?
Because you're not, there's no fungal spores in there, but it's not easy to do straw bale gardening. It's
right,
kind of cool.
Not.
And I've seen people do amazing tomatoes in straw bales.
Yep.
Mine weren't.
You
one
mean
of them.
They plant the tomatoes directly into the bales of straw?
They do, but it's not that easy.
Yeah.
it's a whole, I would even say it's an art form, really.
When I first did it, you got to put something in there that's going to try and convert that straw to good compost. And it has to be high nitrogen, and so the organic solution was, for me, blood meal.
Yep.
And that was a disaster, because as that started to decompose and do its thing, it was flies and maggots, and it smelled like
this is nice Sunday breakfast.
We get it.
You don't need more details.
Need one more detail. It was close enough to the pool where I almost got divorced. Okay. So next time I would use like urea or something like that. But yeah, you need this high nitrogen addition to the straw. You know, Joel Karsten's book is pretty interesting. You know, you can get a lot of information online about it. It might be worth it just to try one bale in the corner or something, stack two of them together and see how it goes for you. And then if it was containers for me, I would want one of those self-watering containers for tomatoes, just or either that or a really big container, because if they dry out, you'll get blossom end rot.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Keep us posted on how it goes.
It's fun to be talking about tomatoes in January.
I know. How about it?
Thanks, Kay.
Thank you.
All right, Darren, we'll wait till after the break for you. We're getting a little late in the half hour, so you guys can spend a couple of moments talking between yourselves. Go ahead.
You know, the straw bale gardening is really interesting, and I love when people try to kind of find creative new ways to grow things. And I think for me, the big trend now in container gardening is those fabric pots. They call them grow bags, and they're containers that are made of often a recycled geotextile fabric.
Well, I'm using one called Root Pouch, which
yep.
is made out of recycled water bottles.
Yep.
And they're only like a 15-gallon one with handles is only like $7.50.
Yeah, they're super inexpensive. They last for many, many years. You can leave them out all winter. And
easy to move if there's no dirt in them.
Exactly. And even if there is dirt in them, a lot of times you can just kind of drag them and move them. And the other cool thing is they keep the roots of the plant from circling, because it does this process called air pruning, which basically is when the root hits the edge of the pot, instead of circling around, it branches. And so you have a really nice, thick, fibrous root system when you grow in those fabric pots. And so I think that's kind of going to be the next big trend.
I actually have a 200-gallon root pouch.
Whoa.
Planted with all sorts of cool weather crops, some ornamental kale, which is actually also edible, and some pansies, and it's all under plastic, so we'll see what happens.
Nice.
But you know, that was an instant garden, and I was thinking, what am I going to fill it up with?
Oh, you find things.
Well, Pitt Moss, the company, it's not peat moss, it's Pitt, P-I-T-T moss. They had extra product left over that they just, they couldn't sell it, you know. It was just like, I don't know what happened to it. It got wet or something happened to it. They said, here you go. And so that's what I filled up my 200-gallon root pouch with.
All right, 866-391-1020, 866-391-1020. Coming back with more of Doug and Jess, plus an opportunity to win a gift certificate from your friends at Janoski's. This is The Organic Gardener, CBS Radio News, in 1 minute. You know, if you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, you're going to get a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's in Clinton. Don't forget their new winter hours, 9 until 6. You want to talk to Doug and Jess? 866-391-1020. Darwin, you're next on KDKA Radio. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was outside looking at my house a couple days ago, and on the third floor of my house, I have some, I think might be a beehive. It isn't maybe 18 inches in diameter. It's gray in color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it is a beehive, I mean, are there bees in there? Is it dormant?
That's a great question. So it's not a beehive. It's a wasp nest. So it's a paper wasp nest. And it's probably a brown paper wasp or a bald-faced hornet, because they will... I know.
Afraid.
Bald-faced hornets are nasty.
They are
They build those sort of oblong gray paper nests.
Which we discover now, this time of the year, because they've been there. It's funny how...
It was there all summer long.
And you walked underneath it, and and nothing happened, and now you see it, and you're scared.
Yeah, and I know, and I don't blame you, because when they attack, they can be very nasty. But the good news is they only use their nests for one season, and then the nest is abandoned upon freezing weather. So all except for the fertilized queens, all the other worker wasps, which is the vast majority of them inside of that nest, die when frost strikes. And the fertilized queens abandon the nest, and they will overwinter, it seems like, sometimes in my attic or under a log or under some bark of a tree. So that nest is completely abandoned. And I actually recommend that you leave the nest intact where it is right now. It will not be reused. It will never be reused. But what it is wasps are territorial. So in the spring, a new female fertilized wasp will not begin to build a new nest anywhere near that one because they're territorial. So just leave it up, consider it an ornament.
pretend I didn't see it.
Yeah, pretend you didn't see it. You can actually buy fake nests, fake wasp nests, like dummy nests, to hang up near a patio or a porch so that the paper wasps don't build a new, real nest anywhere near there. And it actually works quite well to deter them.
Okay, because to be realistically, all summer long, I did notice like some wasps in my yard, I'll just say like two or three, that seemed like a lot to me living in a, small town on a busy street.
Yeah, and I actually don't recommend even in-season destroying the nests, because these are actually very good insects in terms of their ability to help control pests, because inside of that wasp nest, which doesn't seem all that big, but that nest can weigh 20 pounds, and it's largely because it's full of dead caterpillars that would otherwise eat our vegetable garden and other insects that are fed to their larvae. So they're actually great pest control for the vegetable garden.
And as we said, they're there all summer long. You haven't noticed them and usually are not bothered in any way by them. And then you see the nest. I see it actually on the lake where I'm fishing. I see, my gosh, I was right underneath that thing 20
all
times,
year, right. Right. And the thing is, they do get aggressive in the fall. And they get aggressive because they know that their job is to protect their fertilized queen. And they're going to do anything they can to do so. And that's why they get aggressive in the fall. And that's why a lot of times people will try to, knock down the nest or get it sprayed or something like that. My thing is, if you can just stay away from it for a few months, cordon off the area or whatever, eventually they're all going to abandon the nest and die, and they're not going to be a worry for future years.
I had one that I don't know why they built it. It was like 2 feet off the ground in a in an azalea bush, and that was the one that I had.
Yeah, that you have to take care of one that's like that.
Yeah, because I can't tell you the pain that they inflicted on me as I ran up the woods screaming and done. dove into the pool.
If it's high traffic area like that, or around kids or a kids play area, that's a different story.
90 degrees. My hose was stuck on the azalea bush, and I'm yanking on the hose.
Oh, and
I looked down at my legs, and it's like a cartoon. It's like you have the pain.
Yeah.
You look at what's happening, and then you react, and your wheels start spinning like a roadrunner. You run up to the woods screaming, and come back down and dive into the pool.
How'd you get rid of it?
I actually went out at night, and this was scary because it was still really hot. You could hear them pop, 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 pop on being in there, and just basically put a big trash bag around it, cut off the branch, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, and that's actually, they do that. There was one that was hanging over our street that in the fall when my son was walking to the bus stop, and I thought the people that ride up and down our street on a horse, they could, it was right there, their head level when it was sitting. And I thought, somebody's going to walk into that. So the borough came and took care of it. And that's how they did it. They put a plastic bag over it and cut it off that way in the evening when they're all inside of there. And I've heard that that certain medical facilities will take the nests because there's some tests that they're doing on the venom, that its ability to manage pain as it or something like that, like they will do, but I don't know that that
maybe your next career could be getting wasp nests, Rob. It doesn't sound too difficult. What do you think?
And of course, Steve Rapaski at Bee Control, that's what he does.
That's what he does.
All that stuff, yeah.
Easy to beat up on the old guy.
All right, 866.
Are we talking about Doug?
No,
or who
no,
are we talking
I'm pretty,
about?
Oh, okay. I'm pretty old.
No, I'm older than Doug. 866, not much. 866, but still old. 866-391-1020. Let's say hi to Rose in Pittsburgh. Hi, Rose.
Oh, good morning. Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I have a question about my rose trellis. It's a freestanding rose trellis. It's metal. It's beautiful, and it's over a path in my backyard. I've never done anything to it. The roses just bloom one time a year, and then last year we actually put clematis on it so that later in the summer I have this beautiful clematis that's on there. It's like a jungle now because we've never done anything to it. Mm-hmm. Should I cut it completely down? Should I just trim it up? Tell me what to do.
Do you know what kind of rose it is?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, but it only blooms once.
It only blooms one time. They're beautiful pink roses, and I get a lot of them.
Okay.
But, like I say, it's literally like a jungle now, and I don't know whether to just cut it completely down and let it grow back over this trellis,
yeah,
or should I just leave well enough alone?
I wouldn't recommend cutting it all the way back. I would say it probably is in need of a good thinning. So you're going to want to get in there and thin that rose down to maybe 3 to 5 primary canes coming out of the base of the plant.
Oh, okay.
And what you want it, but I would wait to do that until the plant starts to bud up. So maybe like late March, maybe mid-March. Go out there and really thin it down. And
at that time, too, you could find the deadwood.
Yeah, definitely. You know it's easy to find the
deadwood's got to go, too. So,
So then and thin it out. And this is a good time to do it before that clematis really gets intertwined with it. Because once the two are intertwined, and there's also
exactly.
proper way to prune the clematis as well, depending on what type of clematis it is. So, you know, you're gonna want to do that pruning and keep it well pruned from here on out. I would say maybe every 2 to 3 years, go in and do a good thinning like
and
that.
Do a good pruning on
yep.
it.
Yep.
And I do use I use rose tone on it.
Good.
Oh, you know what? Like once a month
yeah,
during
good.
The summer.
That's great.
But so it is. It's a great. Oh, perfect. Thank you very much, kids. Have
You're
a great
welcome.
Day.
Thanks, you too.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back. Congratulations to Mary, winner of that gift certificate from Janoski's. We'd love to hear from you, 866-391-1020. Get ready to clean out the freezer. All sorts of great recipes can be had. We're going to share them all with you, and we hope you'll phone in next hour with Joe and Frank Dantisi on the Coons Cooking Hour. All right, before we get back to Doug and Jess, KDK TV reporting multiple people are dead and multiple people injured following a major crash on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Westmoreland 911 tells KDK reporter Chris Hoffman that the accident involved one tour bus, multiple tractor trailers, and an unknown number of passenger vehicles. A detour is in place for all eastbound and westbound turnpike traffic from between Breezewood and New Stanton. Motorists heading east are being urged to use Route 119 South, US 40 East to Interstate 68 East at Cumberland, Maryland, and I-70 West, and re-enter the turnpike at the Breezewood Interchange exit 161. Westbound motorists are urged to use Route 30 West to Interstate 99 North to US Route 22 West to Route 66 South, and then re-enter turnpike at exit number 75 at New Stanton. So again, multiple people are dead and multiple people injured following a major crash on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. We'll have more as warranted throughout the day here at KDKA Radio. Let's go to Anna. Anna, how you doing? Welcome to KDK Radio.
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Go ahead, please.
I was wondering if you would know any place that I can buy the indoor gloxinia seed. Catalogs are there?
I know a lot of places that sell the plants. I'm trying to think about for the seeds. The place I would try is a catalog called Selected Seeds. And they might have gloxinia. They have a lot of flowers, a lot of heirloom plants, a lot of heirloom seeds as well. So I would try Selected Seeds.
Do you have numbers for that or an address?
No, but we can find one for you. If you keep on listening, we'll look that up and we'll announce it then when we find that information. But that's who I would try for those gloxinias. It's a great plant.
Yes, up around this area, you cannot find them anymore.
Yeah, it's tough. It is. It's sort of an old-fashioned plant, but I understand why it's so popular. It's. I hope it comes back into vogue someday because they really are lovely plants. We used to see them a lot this time of year when people would have the primroses blooming. They'd also have gloxinia and calceolaria, which is called the pocketbook plant. That's another one that sort of has fallen out of vogue, but they deserve a renaissance, I think. They're just lovely plants, lovely house plants.
All right, let's go to Brad in Clarion. Hey, Brad, how you doing? Good morning.
I wanted to tell you guys about me getting rid of a yellow jacket nest in the ground in my yard. I was mowing around there and come back around the next year. Around there, and there was a bunch of bees flying over top of the ground there, and so I finished mowing. Then I pulled my tractor over top of that nest and just let it sit there and blades running.
Oh, Brad, boy, you're lucky you didn't get stung putting the tractor over top of it.
Well, I didn't get stung, but after I pulled away, the ground was yellow with bees.
Yeah, I'll bet. So that's actually another type of paper wasp, that's the yellow jacket. But instead of building their papery nest up in the tree, they build their papery nest in the ground. In Pittsburgh, people call them ground bees, but they're actually not bees at all. They are a wasp. They're a type of, they're a European paper wasp, basically. And they do. They're sneaky sons of guns, too, right? Because a lot of times you don't see them going in and out of the entrance hole to that nest until you drive over it with the lawnmower or something like that, or you're playing, running around the yard with the kids or something like that, and they come out. So they are, that's a cautionary tale for those as well. I always tell people, you know what, if you find a ground wasp nest, you know, find the entrance hole, they go in and out of the entrance hole, put a rock on top of it at night when they're all in there. Don't put gasoline or anything like that in it, because that can harm the trees and plants and certainly the soil and all of the soil wildlife. So you definitely don't want to do that. But a lot of times just putting a rock over the entrance and keeping your eye on the place, they might dig another entrance and then you have to put a rock over that one as well. But eventually it'll take care of the situation.
For the gloxinia seed, I found them at Hertz, which is H-I-R-T-S, but I can't get a phone number to come up on my phone here. So
Hertz, H-I-R-T-S.
Yes.
Okay. For the gloxinia seeds.
Yeah, that's where you can find them, and I wish I had the phone number for you.
All right. Great. Do we have another call?
No, nope, just you and me.
All right, just you and me. Oh, boy. So have you ever grown gloxinia?
From plants.
Okay.
Really beautiful.
They are really beautiful. And there, you know, the plant, that's the other thing. If you can't, I love the challenge of growing something like that from seed, but if you can't find the seed and you can buy a plant, they're pretty inexpensive when you find them at local greenhouses. They're not going to cost you a lot of money and you can have it for many, many years. And so that, you know, you don't get the challenge of growing them from seed and the pleasure from growing them from seed, but you still get to enjoy the plant.
How much time, Rob? Can you do me a favor and search that H-I-R-T-S seeds and see if we can come up with an 800 number for
her?
There
you go. We'll get the big man on it.
Yeah.
He's got the big computer over there.
And you're right. You know, that's one of those plants that, you know, it's come and gone.
Yeah.
You know, just like a lot of plants, you know, it's kind of like fashion.
Yeah.
So you haven't looked through your catalogs. You haven't looked through your seed
catalogs. I really
catalogs.
Haven't had a chance. And of course, you know, the Baker Creek seed catalog
is
like
huge.
The giant seed catalog. I just look through it and I just drool. You just start drooling over all those different. But I also know, you know, one of the challenges, I think a lot of gardeners face this, is you want to buy that unusual cucumber that you were talking about, or, you know, some funky melon or something like that, but you don't need 25 seeds of it. You might just want one or two seeds of it. And so I wish that a lot of the seed companies would have like sampler packets where it would just be just a few seeds. I would be willing to pay, you know, for the shipment of that and for the ability to just buy a few seeds or even like a trial packet for it, where it's a little less expensive, fewer seeds, and that way it's not as much of a gamble, you know?
Here is the number to get those gloxinia seeds from Hertz. It's 1-330-239-0506. 330-239-0506 for your gloxinia seeds. And I'm sure there's some other sources. I just looked real quick. You know, and you might eat, there might be like local nurseries that have that Gloxina seed, but that would be a rare one. That'd be a weird one to find.
Yeah, it would be, because I believe probably most of the nurseries that grow those plants will grow them from plugs that are purchased in from larger growers, and then they'll pot them up and grow them out from those plugs. And so then, you know, obviously they don't have the seeds on hand because they're not growing them from seed.
Well, the other thing I noticed in my looking through those seed catalogs is how expensive hybrid seed is becoming.
Mm.
It's expensive, you know. I'm growing mostly open pollinated, so if I wanted to, I could save the seeds. But man, it could be $6.95 for a packet of like regular tomato seeds, you know. But it might be something new, some new cross. Also, the other trend that I've seen is crossing heirlooms to get the best out of both types of mm-hmm. heirloom, but then it becomes a hybrid seed. And so you have to, if you really love the variety, you have to rely on the seed company to buy the seeds.
Yeah.
And a lot of times hybrids will go away. I grew one called Pixie when I first started gardening. Pixie 2, actually, it was called. It was I just loved it. It was just bigger than a cherry tomato, and it just didn't catch on. And I used to have plants, and I'd give them to my interns that would come work for me for the summer. And sometimes hybrids go away. Remember, the Organic Gardener is always aimed to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
Okay, guys, have a great day. Listen, I wanted to take a little time and tell you again about this developing story of local interest. Ashley Funyak gave this to me about 15 minutes ago. Multiple people are dead and multiple people injured following a major crash on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. A Westmoreland 911 telling KDKA reporter Chris Hoffman that the accident involved one tour bus, multiple tractor trailers, and an unknown number of passenger vehicles. A detour is in place for all eastbound and westbound turnpike traffic between Breezewood and New Stanton. Here's what they have for you. Motorists heading east are being urged to use Route 119 South, US 40 East to Interstate 68 East at Cumberland, Maryland, to I-70 West and re-enter the turnpike at the Breezewood Interchange, exit 161. Now, westbound motorists, according to the Turnpike, are urged to use Route 30 West to Interstate 99 North to U.S. Route 22 West to Route 66 South and re-enter the Turnpike at exit number 75. That's New Stanton. So, again, big story, local interest. Multiple people are dead and multiple people injured following a major crash on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. A detour is in place for all eastbound and westbound Turnpike traffic between Breezewood and New Stanton. We'll continue to follow this story throughout the day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.